seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Welcome along, Golf Weekly friends. We are coming to you live from Carlow Golf Club. We've just had our classic outing. We've had a great day. Nathan Murphy's alongside me. Hello.
How are you?
How did you play today?
Really, really well, Joe.
Yeah.
I think if there was a singles competition, I would have won it. I drove the ball just straight down the middle, hole after hole. I didn't miss a putt.
Yeah.
It's radio. I can say what I want.
Yeah. I played with you. None of that is true. But we had a good day. Carlo treated us very nicely.
Once again, the sun shone. We got a nice little workout. Okay. We learned a few things from Peter Lawrie. He gave us a couple of tips that worked for one shot for me.
Yeah. Peter Lawrie is here. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
No comments on our golf, please.
Okay.
Makes it very difficult for us to talk about golf if you explain to people just how bad we are. So preferably don't do that. You had a nice day in Carlow Golf Club?
Loved it. Very much so.
Yeah.
Here with Damien McGrain. So we had a great day. Weather was nice and golf course was in great shape.
Yeah. Damien McGrain, this is your new home.
Yes, it sure is. Yeah. I'm here 6 months now. So I'm now a working man. I know what it feels like.
It must be quite the change to get into the, I was going to say monotony of day-to-day real job, but okay, I will say that, the monotony of a day-to-day job as opposed to the lovely lives that you guys had for a long time.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. You know, as a golf pro, you play golf for a living, you get paid every so often, and life generally is okay. And then I stopped playing golf, obviously, 2 years back. I played a little bit in the domestic scene, and now I'm back where I started off, in the club pro scene. So you have to work for a living now. I work long hours, I work hard here on behalf of the members in Carlow Golf Club. So it's originally, though, what I started out to be,
right,
a golf club pro. So all really has happened is I've gone back to where I started off. My journey in the middle was a perk of the trade,
right,
for sure.
I guess it's fitting with the USPGA on that we're almost touching on that subject, because it'll be full of golf pros over in Missouri this week. It always strikes me as a tough, like as you said, long hours, and you know, golf clubs all around the country have to fight very hard to do well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's changing as well. Like, I was involved in retail in Wexford Golf Club, and I left there in 2005. So I've gone back into that side of the business 2018. So it's a very different trade. As you know, you can buy your stuff on the internet and get it delivered to the house.
Yeah.
The day I've gone into the pro shop and sizing up the pro and cutting a deal and given a few waggles of a club inside the pro shop and the carpet, that day is long gone. So the business has changed and evolved. So the golf pros now have to be more qualified, and they have to be more personable to the members. They need to get outside and meet the members and hustle in the car park and find the business from somewhere. So it is rewarding, but it's a very difficult job.
Do you miss being out on tour?
No. I played golf because I was good at it. I didn't play golf because I wanted to play golf.
You don't miss the travel, the nice camaraderie?
No, I was waiting for the day I would finish playing. Yeah. So my career...
You didn't love golf, no?
No. Oh, no, I only played golf because I got well paid. But there's no other reason. I was different to most guys. Most guys wanted to play on the tour. I developed a good golf game, and eventually it took me from A to B, B to C, C to D, and all of a sudden I found myself where everybody longed to be.
Yeah.
And I'm playing on the tour and going, well, this is not actually where I longed to be. But having said that, I did enjoy it. And as Padraig Harrington says to me one day, make sure you never say that it's the worst job in the world. Because everybody on the outside of the ropes thinks that to be a professional golfer is the dream job.
Mm.
So when people think that, you can never, ever criticise the business.
Mm. For some of them, it was a dream job. Some of them really enjoyed it, I presume.
Some golfers?
Yeah.
Well, absolutely, yeah. Some people are golf perverts. They just can't play enough. They want to play more and more and more. But most guys, as you get on a bit older, you start wanting to slow down. You don't want to be getting up at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
to drive to Dublin Airport. So when my career finished as a full-time playing professional, I was ready, and I had my bag already packed to leave the show.
And were you, when you were getting into it, were you very competitive? Was that a big part of the draw of golf for you? And do you not miss that side of it, of getting the very best out of yourself and seeing how it compares to other people?
For sure, like, the drug is the competitive side and the buzz of being on the leaderboard or trying to get onto the leaderboard. That's the buzz, but that's a young man's game. As you get on a bit older, you sort of fall out of love with that buzz, and then it turns into hard work and a bit of a chore. And needless to say, in your 40s, it happens less and less also. So when it happens less and less, you actually realise, you know what?
Yeah.
There's no room for me here at this table anymore.
And when you were a young man and you said you developed a good golf game, good enough to take you to the European Tour. So if you didn't have like that, you know, that love for the game to go and practice and everything else, was practice for you a bit of a chore in your late teens, 20s? Like, I'd say Peter, and you can correct me wrong, but people love the game. You'd have to drag them off the range. You'd have to drag them in. They'd want to play 72 holes a day if they could. How did you get so good without loving the game?
But I'm a competitor, so I loved competing. Practicing and all the frilly stuff at the edges didn't do anything for me, but I wanted to compete. So that was my drug, was the competition. And if I didn't do well, I'd want to do better, and I'd focus my mind, not so much my practice time, but focus my mind on getting better. What do I need to do? How do I do it? Where do I do it? Always to try and improve.
Okay.
But it wasn't on the range like some people.
Yeah.
Some people spend all day in the driving range.
I was going to say, so you didn't get, you know, from striking really crisp 7-iron after 7-iron after 7-iron, that didn't do it for you the way it would for lots of the golfers?
No, I don't think so. I think that as a professional golfer, you play to compete, to see your name up on the board,
right,
or to get your name on a trophy.
No, I get like all that as well.
Like
totally
practicing is only the frills that go along the edges.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? It's not actually the gig.
I totally get the leaderboard thing, like that buzz, and you're like the adrenaline, amazing. But I think, Peter, a lot of golfers also love the sensory feeling of hitting a crisp 7-iron and actually love the mechanics of the game.
There is some golfers out there that go through the mechanisms of the game and are theorists of the game, of how they swing the club and the best way to swing the club. And there's plenty of them out there that would stand on the range all day, every day, and work on which way they're going to swing it. There's others out there who would be more concerned about how they're going to get it around the golf course. And to me, that's the most important thing. How do you get it around the golf course to get your name on that leaderboard and to produce the thrill of it? I, unlike Damien, was disappointed to leave the tour. I loved playing golf. I loved competing. And it's very difficult to substitute that now. That the adrenaline you used to get in being in contention was second to none. And it's nearly impossible to recreate that now. However, I don't miss the flying. I don't miss going to airports.
Sure.
That part of it I don't miss at all, but the actual playing, I miss it quite a lot.
And do you look back when you go home, and I don't know if you have the China Open trophy on the mantelpiece, but do you look back in your 10, 15 years on tour and think, yeah, I got the very best out of myself, I achieved everything I could have achieved? Like, were you satisfied when you got to the end?
I'm lazy by trade, so with my lazy attitude to golf, I'm absolutely satisfied with what I achieved. I'm content with the amount of money I accumulated. If I'd done things dramatically different, maybe I would have won an extra 5%. But the fact is, when you're lazy, you have to evaluate between what's the least amount of work I have to do and yet win the maximum amount of money. Because that's life, isn't it? You want to do as little as you can and win as much as you can. So in golf, it's the same type of thing. I would never work as hard as Padraig or Peter, never. And if I did work as hard, I would be tired, and possibly I would have left my best work on the driving range.
Yeah.
So I was of the opinion, I'll hit 30 balls, then I'll go out and play golf, and at least I'm match fit. Because then I hit my 40s and I'm saying, well, if I had to hit 100 balls today and then go out and play 18 holes, I know I'm not going to be match fit on the back nine. So it's actually counterproductive at that point. So I had to manage my own situation and my own fitness levels, which would be very low. Like, I'm built to walk, but, you know, as soon as you put me under pressure and stressful situations, big golf courses, and all of a sudden all these add up to something, which means it's going to be more difficult. So the fitter man will win. I was getting into the second half of my career, and every year was a bonus in my mind. So I tried to conserve my energy so I could play golf on the golf course, Nathan. I know it's not what you'd expect to hear, but at some point I have to manage myself. If I went to the gym to become an athlete at 40, I would definitely hurt myself because I've never done that like that before, and then I'd be off the tour.
It's an amazing thing to hear someone who's made their career, a good part of their career in golf, say that, one, they didn't necessarily love the sport, it was sort of a means to an end, and two, they were lazy. It's kind of a miracle you made it.
No, but my buzz was the competition.
No, I understand
and
that.
And it's nothing got to do with watching Sky News for 4 hours every night and then switch off the TV and go to sleep, get up the next day, breakfast, hit 30 balls, go out and play 18 holes. I was doing what as best I could manage my own situation to survive and give myself the best possible opportunity to compete. But if I was burnt out, I would be less likely to be able to compete. Mm.
So it's not laziness then, it's just managing yourself.
I was managing my own situation. It wasn't a great situation, but I was managing my own situation to get the best results I could. Mm. So then I hit 40, and then I go to 45. So all I'm saying was that, you know, I realised where I was in the game. Mm. And by managing my own situation, I was able to prolong my career. And I stand by the way I done it. If I was doing it again, I'd do the same again.
Right.
I wouldn't promote to the juniors in Carlow Golf Club. That's the way forward. But at the same time, if I met a guy of my generation and my age, I'd be saying, listen, you need to do X, Y, and Z to manage yourself.
Yeah,
I think like many pros out there, like Borek has spoken about this quite a lot, about how much he's practiced over the last X amount of years. And if he was to go back and again and do it, would he practice as much? Would Vijay Singh have practiced as much? And I think Borek and Vijay would probably come back and say they probably would have, you know, reduced it a little bit to prolong their career without injury or recurring injuries. But look, you know, there's plenty of golfers out there who go to the gym and are on the very like a fine line of being absolutely perfectly fit or injured. Alex Noren would be one of those players. Goes to the gym, pumps it big time, but he's on the cusp of hurting himself every week. And you know, Tiger Woods, the same thing. You know, if we could all go back in Tiger Woods' career and have it over again, you know, would he be mixing with a that he was, you know, trying to do marine stuff rather than being a golfer. Like, he wasn't a marine, he was a golfer. So we all have different parts of our career that we could have done more. I myself tinkered with the fitness regimes and stuff like that, and I felt that, you know, in a way I got nearly too flexible and my swing changed quite a bit. And then, you know, you have to hone yourself back in and say, right, how do I get back to the swing I knew? So it's a fine balancing act.
Yeah, very interesting. I guess it's the week of the USPGA. We were doing a chat here at Carlow Golf Club for all the Golf Weekly listeners who came. And I guess Rory kind of jumps up. Everyone wants to know what you think of Rory. And you were both saying you think, in particular you, Damien, were saying that you think big days are just around the corner and you're not too worried about him long term. It was interesting, someone asked you, should he change his caddy, or how do you feel about inexperienced caddies? And you had really interesting points about, even just generally, whatever about Harry Diamond, who you may not know, but even just generally the difference between a friend or a brother coming out and a professional caddy. And I'd assumed like one of the issues would be just yardages or that kind of stuff. And you were saying it's not actually that at all. It's often down to kind of back nine territory on a Sunday and like managing the whole situation, the crowd and everything, which is, I don't think, something anybody would have thought of when we're thinking about Harry Diamond or Shane Lowry with his brother on the back. You might just explain what you were talking about, really, that back nine situation where you think a caddy is very important, a professional caddy.
Yeah, I think that there's many chapters that a player and a caddy goes through on any one week at a tour event. Like on a Monday and a Tuesday, it's all fresh and easy and relaxed. Everybody's in great form. It doesn't matter if the 7-iron comes up short in the front bunker. It doesn't matter if the 8-iron flies over the back of the green into a pond. It's only a practice round. It doesn't matter. So then on Wednesday, then, it's pro-am, a little bit more serious. Thursday, Friday, again, doesn't really matter. If you're on song, you're on the top of the leaderboard. If you're not playing well, you might miss the cut. But then Saturday and Sunday, now it comes to payday. The caddies then need to earn their crust. They need to be there for the players. So when you get down to the business end of the tournament, then the caddies need to be caddies. They need to control the crowds, control the situation. And my fear always with a friend on the golf bag, as soon as you get into a good position, possibly because the friend has you so relaxed, then you get into a good position in the golf tournament, then you turn around, you look at the caddy, and he's a friend, he's not a caddy. So you're expecting a friend then to become a caddy, control crowds, rake bunkers, give you the correct club, keep up with the pace of play, not be talking when somebody else is hitting the ball. And all of a sudden, the friend situation starts to not work and starts to fall down. Then when the caddy gets nervous, the player then can see that his mate, who was great crack on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday, now he's speechless because you're at the top of the leaderboard. He's speechless because he's terrified of making a mistake. And all of a sudden, you don't have a caddy. So now, for argument's sake, if it's Rory, Rory could be in a position with an inexperienced caddy that the caddy is actually not there. He then has a friend in front of thousands of people who are all excited, possibly looking to see a home favourite win, and Rory's from the other side of the world, and all of a sudden he doesn't have the support that he needs. Now, I'm not saying Rory's caddy's not qualified, because he's done a few tournaments at this stage, so he's learning on the fast track, for sure. But the friend is great for certain occasions, but when it comes to the business end of winning a golf tournament, you need a caddy, and all the best caddies traditionally always have the best jobs.
I was surprised that, though, like, crowd control would be such a thing, because you kind of just think, you know, you see Rory about to hit, and every, you know, caddy might just go, okay, everyone, and generally people shut up, no? Or do you think afternoons on a Sunday there's booze and there's... Is the numbers of people? Or is there?
But if you take the Irish Open this year and look at the marshals around the 18th green, they turn around, they lift up the sign and ask the people to be quiet.
Yeah.
So they do that from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Eventually, the people don't even listen because they're so repetitive.
Yeah.
So the marshals, by the afternoon, the people in the grandstand are starting to get excited or tipsy, or whatever the case may be, are bored.
Yeah.
The marshals are lifting up the sign and asking them to be quiet. And eventually the spectators have no interest in the marshals. Then you need a strong caddy to step up. And when he demands them to be quiet, they listen, because it's something brand new. My fear is, with a friend caddying, they're a lot more timid because they're not used to the situation. Mm. They're not used to talking and demanding the attention of thousands of people. The top caddies do it without batting an eyelid. The friends will always struggle to control that situation. Now, they do learn and they can learn, but, you know, there's twos and fours, and there's things that go right, there's always things that go wrong. Friends caddying is a great thing for the first half of the week.
Mm.
Then when it comes to the second half of the week, then it becomes more difficult. And that stress is stress that the player can pass over to a caddy to let him manage that caddy.
Mm.
But if he's not a caddy, if he's a friend, then the friend hands it back to the player.
And I would think some players, it would almost put them off if they had to tell people to shut up. You know, they might feel, you know, I didn't want to have to do that.
It's generally not in the player's remit to have to start screaming at people.
Yeah.
Generally not.
Mm.
And if the other caddy can do it, and all of a sudden it's my turn to hit my ball and my caddy can't do it, well, then I even feel it even more.
Yes.
That I'm the only one out there.
Mm.
It's like driving a car blind.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I'm the odd one out then.
Mm.
And again, it's more issues and more stress that you don't need when you're trying to win a tournament.
Yeah, it's a great point, because if Rory turns around and has a right pop at 20 people behind him,
he can't.
That potentially becomes a story very quickly, where if Harry Diamond stands up and has a pop at them, suddenly that's a strong caddy protecting his player.
Mm.
Yeah, and it's good caddying.
It's funny because when people say good caddying, it's almost one of the last things I would think of. Now, as you explain it, it makes perfect sense. But, you know, I thought when you brought up, when you were bringing up like the Sunday of a major, it would be something like, well, how does he work out that instead of a 6 iron, it's a 7 iron because of the adrenaline? And it's about that kind of stuff, not almost the atmosphere and the situation he controls.
But if you think about, if you were caddying tomorrow for the best player in the world, and he drops a ball on the fairway here in Carlow, you could give him 12 clubs out of the 14 clubs in the bag, and he'll hit 12 of them beside the flag.
Okay.
The best player in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not difficult. The actual caddying process is the easy bit.
Right.
It's all the little things, the comments that are made, or a beer can flying over your head. It's all the little things, the distractions, that actually knock your focus. Because these people at the top of the game generally are in the zone. That's what they used to call it when I used to play.
Yeah.
The problem is, how do you keep your player in there?
What did you want from your caddy? You know, the top one or two things above all else.
Well, I was good because I had the same caddy all the time. So I knew exactly what he would do and what he wouldn't do. So when I had my head down looking at a ball, I knew he was going to scream at somebody. So because I knew, there was no surprises in there. But if I'm wondering, is he going to ask that person to put down their ham sandwiches and let me hit this ball?
Yeah.
You know, if I'm wondering that, my attention is not on the shot I'm trying to hit. My attention is way off.
And on some level, would he see you with your head down and he'd sort of know?
He knows when I'm going
to
hit.
Damien wants me to get this lad to shut up.
He knows when I'm going to hit, you see. He knows my routine. So he knows I'm 12 seconds away from hitting this ball. So he knows he can ask this guy, stop what you're doing, please.
Yeah.
And he will be that straight and abrupt, and they will stop in their tracks.
And it was that you wanted from him above everything? Or was it important what he said to you after a bad shot, after a good shot? Did you want much talk from him? Like, is all that stuff important to you?
That it is important, but that's only banter.
Okay.
That's only communication.
Okay.
But when you're contesting to win a tournament, you need a caddy to be a caddy.
You say that, you mean manage the crowd and manage the distractions?
Because there's different circumstances.
Yeah.
When you're trying to win a tournament, I could be trying to win a tournament over a local hero.
Yeah.
So they'll all talk and walk and chat when I'm playing. They'll all scream a lot louder when he sinks a putt. And they'll all mute or whatever if I sink a putt. So there's managing all the situations. You have to picture what happens on a Sunday.
Yeah, no, sure.
Friday, it's a different scenario.
Yeah.
If you're playing great, you're at the top of the leaderboard. If you miss a putt, it doesn't matter. But come Sunday afternoon, all these putts do matter. So it changes. And you have to appreciate that it's different, and everybody has a slightly different role to play. You're not happy-go-lucky with a bag of potato in the bag and a bottle of Coke, because it's all a bit of fun.
Mm.
All of a sudden, it's the bananas are out,
yeah,
and the Powerade
the
is out.
Protein drinks.
And
yeah,
protein, because you need to get all this right on Sunday
what
afternoon.
About like green reading or any of that sort of course management, or, you know, no, don't be so aggressive here, we'll go for the par 5 and 3. Is that a caddy's place, do you feel, to insert himself into that kind of stuff?
In my opinion, if the player feels he can walk on water, if I was caddying for a player and he told me he could walk on water, I'd say go right ahead.
Okay.
Because who am I? I carry the bag, I help as best I can. And when a player believes he can do anything, that's why he's at the top of the leaderboard. And if he believes he can do anything, you just let him off. All the caddy does is carry the bag, hand him a bottle of water. There's very little else to be done. You know, because the player is obviously playing fantastic. He's obviously a great player. Yeah. So all you do is let him do what he does best. That's how he got into that position. Now,
because JP got criticised for that when he was at Rory. Like, I remember even Augusta, was it 2 years ago on 11? You know, the downhill, the water on the left, and Rory was in the trees on the left. And the commentary team were saying, don't try and hit a hook out of those trees onto the green. And they were almost blaming JP as much as Rory. And Rory did try and hit the hook out of the trees and obviously went into the water. And they were saying, where was the caddy? Where was JP there? He should have taken that club out of his hand. Stevie Williams would have taken the club out of the hand. I did wonder if it was unfair or not on JP.
You know, you're talking about a particular shot in a particular situation.
Sure, it's to give an example.
In
though,
my opinion, Rory was probably trying to draw a 7 iron out of the trees.
Yeah.
And he pulled it. and now he hit it further left than he expected to. Then it went into the water, yeah. And it's everybody's fault. He probably hit a bad shot. Okay, he was playing a high-risk shot, but then he hit a bad shot on top of a high-risk shot. So, in my opinion, you know, it's rare that a player would make a bad decision. And then it's literally impossible for two minds to make the same bad decision at the same time.
Okay.
So, in my opinion, that sort of stuff doesn't happen in reality. Hmm. And if Rory was frustrated, he might be sniping at JP, and then JP every so often might tell him to behave himself. And that's good caddying. That's not degrading or belittling the player. That's good caddying, trying to get the guy's head back into the game.
What are you expecting from Rory this week? I heard Thomas Bjorn talking yesterday, saying he feels Rory's about to go boom, that he's going to go on one of these winning streaks. I guess, unfortunately for Rory, if it comes next week, it's too late. If it comes in the FedEx Cup, it's too late, because it's still all about winning the majors. Like, maybe he's a victim of his own success, victim of our expectations. We still look at him and think, what's your sense of him?
I personally think we all think of Rory like Tiger, and we all want Rory to kind of behave like Tiger in a way. And I think he has tried that a little bit, but not to the state that, you know, we want him to behave like Tiger. We saw Tiger pretty much go to every single tournament that he played, and he gave himself a chance to win. Now, he'd probably only play 21, 22 weeks of the year, but he came completely prepared to win that tournament, and pretty much he did that every time he played. Rory, on the other side of the stick, is a far better player when he's playing quite a bit. I like to see Rory play a bit, because he's that kind of a player. He needs to get into a groove, and I feel that he is in that groove at the moment with a couple of clubs in the bag. But I'd certainly love to see him, you know, really sharpen up his short game. He really, really needs to sharpen up his wedge play. And when it comes to golf courses like last week Firestone, and this week the USPGA, you know, it's a driver kind of wedge, 9-iron type of golf course, and that's what he has to improve on.
He mentioned yesterday in his press conference, Thomas Bjorn was saying it to him about a year ago, that Bjorn sort of said, well, one of the reasons you're such a great driver is you've quick hand speed, and there's separation and other technical terms that me and Nathan don't understand. But he was saying all that stuff is great for your driving and your distance, but probably doesn't help you with your wedge play. Does that tally technically? Does that sound possible?
It sounds possible, all right, if he's hitting everything at full speed, but I don't feel like he's hitting everything at full speed all the time. I think if he go and work on his wedge play, a bit like Dustin Johnson did, to get to world number one, I think it's a stage where if he really, really works on 100 yards in and knows exactly how far away, you know, he can hit those shots,
yeah,
then we'll see a new Rory McIlroy.
It's a USPGA Eve. A bomber's paradise is what everyone says. So, I mean, Tiger Woods is going to be incredibly accurate with the driver by the standards he's set over the last number of years. So it's not really one where people are tipping Tiger the way they were at Carnoustie. Are we looking at the usual suspects, the bombers? The course is wet. That brings Rory into play, doesn't it?
It certainly does. You know, Rory's been hitting it, 420-odd yards last week was one of his tee shots. You know, he's going to be right up there. Justin Thomas, can he win again after last week's, you know, heroic win? Dustin Johnson hits the ball a long way. You know, I'll go back to my mate Tony Fenu. You know, he did well in the Masters. He's actually done quite well in the majors so far this
year.
He's
good at Carnoustie as well. And Shinnecock,
yeah. Which I was surprised at Carnoustie, but Shinnecock I wasn't surprised. So he's my outside bet this week. But as you said, it's a long hitter's paradise.
Yeah. Very last one. Do you find this guy, like, Bomber's Paradise grand and Firestone as well? It was like driver wedge. Kind of boring golf to watch, isn't it? Do you find it a little bit, like, compared to Carnoustie, where you have all these different options off the tee and you're seeing different strategies? And I thought Firestone, where it's literally hit it as far as you can, wedge it on, was very repetitive very quickly.
And this course, by all accounts, it's pretty much the exact same. It wouldn't be any surprise to see 7 or 8 of last week's top 10 contend once again.
Would it float your boat to watch golf like that, or do you enjoy it for its own brilliance?
Well, what it means is that it brings more of the field into the fray. So instead of having 12 guys who are likely to win, you probably have 50 guys who are likely to feature, because the golf course, the tests aren't as difficult and aren't as severe. Mm. So you're right, it'll be a mixed leaderboard. God knows who'll be on it. But then come Sunday evening, the same guys generally will drift up and the same guys will drift down. Mm. So I think that, you know, with a bit of luck, it will be a tight format, and there'll be, just like in the British Open, they were grouped together at the top, and all of a sudden halfway through nine on the Sunday was tight.
Yeah.
And it was very interesting. Everybody had a few minutes of glory at the top of the leaderboard. Mm. As they all fell back then. It sounds to me like all of a sudden it's just going to be 20, 21, 22.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a Sunday night of just watching how far the numbers will walk up. But remember, we have to appreciate how hugely talented these players are.
Yeah.
Don't think for a minute that any of us guys could breeze around in one over. We'd breeze around in 20 over.
Yeah.
Like, these are still hell of tough courses. It's just that the modern player is such a fantastic animal, he's able to just tear these places apart.
Yeah. So what the winner's going to be hitting at 300 yards anyway, we can say that much.
Well, an average over, yeah, 320, I would have said. But that's, you know, we're going to have to go, and I think the powers to be are going to go and have to look at the ball and the equipment, and, you know, how far is it going. They don't seem to be able to make a positive decision on these kind of things for a long time.
The conversation about the golf ball is probably one that the off the ball listeners are going to force us to talk about only on Golf Weekly.
That may be just too much golf talk for them. Well, we'll wrap it up there. And so the USPGA starts tomorrow. Thanks to you, Peter, as ever.
Thank you.
And Damien, thanks for having us here at Carlo.
No problem.
Put on a brilliant day. And Ping gave us brilliant prizes as well for the winners. So it was great. They got their Ping drivers and golf bags and various bits. So best of luck with things here at Carlo.
Great. Thanks very much.
And thanks a million. Cheers.
All my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here in Dardanelle, all picket town. Little J.D. Starter kid right here.